Milroe for the football. He's got it. Sooners bring pressure. Picked up. Hit as he throws. Ball's in the air. Intercepted. Woody Washington on senior night. Intercepted. Milroe got smashed.
Thank you to Learfield for that audio. Three interceptions by Jalen Milroe. Woof. I mean, just a terrible game by Alabama. The most shocking result from the weekend. I mean, there was some competition, Pearl, but college football took center stage this weekend, and Alabama losing and now being potentially all but out of the inaugural 12-team college football playoff is a shock that very few saw coming.
Nope, didn't see that coming. Should have saw it coming. It's hard to play in the SEC at night. Milroe, by the way, Milroe is still, we're worried about his NFL draft. He still made some throws. They're like, whoa, that guy has talent galore. This is, and I'm starting to wonder, my question is about Kalen DeBoer. Are his teams disciplined, and can they play 60 minutes a game week in and week out? I guess they did at Washington, but I'm not sure in the SEC if that's going to work. Like, I am now nervous about Kalen DeBoer's future in Alabama. And I know I was totally high on him 4 weeks ago, but this team just seems off. And obviously, the personnel losses in the offseason hurt. You just saw Caleb Downs just dominating in Ohio State. I came into the season. Remember, EJ and I bet about it. I said Alabama is going to suffer from all these personnel losses with the coaching change, which is very natural. And now I think it's sort of coming home. I don't think they're quite as talented as past Alabama teams.
See,
quite as deep either.
How can this be like a talent thing, though, right? Because I watched them beat Georgia. I watched them hang on to beat Georgia.
Right.
I saw them blow out LSU. Yes, I saw them lose to Vanderbilt. That was shocking. That was one of those weird, and Vandy came ready in that game. I did see them lose to Tennessee. You know what? Tennessee is a great defense. And so this is the thing. I wasn't expecting this because I don't think the talent was the issue. Maybe you're right about Kalen DeBoer because they just seem like they were flat. Totally flat. And, it's not like Oklahoma. Yes, they were able to run the ball in this game. No doubt about it. But their quarterback for Oklahoma, Jackson Arnold, was 9-for-11 with 68-yard passing. Now, he was 131 yards on the ground, so that's a lot. But 68-yard passing, and you beat Alabama? I mean, that's crazy to me.
We've been waiting for this Jackson Arnold game for about, 3 years now, or
that's
2 years,
true.
Ever since he got there. Yeah, everyone knows the drill with that, but that's college football. I think Alabama, they can't, maybe the stats will prove me wrong, but they can't road grade like they used to. Like their run game was terrible against Oklahoma, and that destroyed them. You can't put a quarterback like Jalen Milroe in 3rd and 9 a lot.
Well, Jalen Milroe was not effective on the ground. 15 carries for 7 yards.
Yeah.
It's just, here's the thing. They asked Jalen Milroe to do way, way, way too much. And in a game like this, it was, he couldn't. He couldn't even rise above. And I think that, I don't know, it's just odd to me. And listen, I don't think Alabama's going to find their way into this college football playoff. I think
it's going to be tough.
It's going to be very, very, very hard. Maybe they get in on the brand if a million things break right for them, but I don't see it happening. And it's just so incredible to me that when the college football playoff expanded to 12 teams, you would think, well, obviously that means Alabama's in. And the fact that they're not, just nuts. And I hope that there's not like too much of a knee-jerk reaction, though, on Kalen DeBoer, because you don't want to start this thing where you're cycling through coaches because nobody's living up to Nick Saban. Even Nick Saban in his first season, it wasn't all gangbusters, right? So I would hope that Kalen DeBoer would get a lot more time from the fan base before they start calling for him.
Well, yeah, and to be fair, he didn't really have a full offseason. So can't judge them now. I mean, Alabama, I think this was their lowest preseason ranking we've seen in forever. It is shocking they didn't make the Final 12, but I don't think anyone was really coming into the season saying Alabama, it's the typical Alabama championship team. Expectations had lowered a little bit.
I don't know. You picked Jalen Miller to win the Heisman.
Yeah, and I did, and I was in it for half. I was wrong about that one.
No, but I'm saying you still had high hopes, though. They were a 14.5-point favorite going into this game. I mean, it's just, this one was, indescribably frustrating and awful for Alabama.
Yeah. But this isn't, I mean, again, like this is the worst. I think it's the lowest they've been ranked since Saban got there coming into the season. They had, I think Georgia was the team that everyone thought was going to be a house on fire this year. But regardless, like this was a embarrassing loss, terrible. Milroe did play poorly. NFL, I don't think, cares about one single college game. Question is he's obviously a great runner. Is he developing enough as a passer? You thought Kellen DeBoer would really get him to show something in the pocket, hasn't shown it yet. It's just utterly disappointing. Not, you know, we should not be shocked. Going on the road in the SEC is a dangerous thing to do.
855-212-4227. We're talking about stunning upsets from this weekend. You had three teams that were ranked in the top 10 all lose. So Alabama was one of them, Ole Miss was another, and Indiana was the other. Now, Ole Miss, listen, this one definitely hurts. I can't say I was as shocked by this one as I was by Alabama.
Oh, no.
And there were some really, Lane Kiffin, man, there's just some funny decisions that he decided to make in this game. And if you're watching this one closely, where Ole Miss loses, Jackson Dart throws two interceptions at the end of the game on two separate drives when they had a chance to get back into the game. They were only down by a touchdown. But they do this thing, Perloff, where they have this big defensive tackle. His name's J.J. Pegues, right? And he's 6'3", and he's 300 pounds. He plays defense, but he played a little tight end, I guess, in high school or whatever. So they give it to him sometimes on short yardage. He's been perfect all season heading into this game. 12-for-12 when they give him the ball on offense to pick up like a yard or two. He was 3-for-5, I think, on this day. He could not pick up the yard that they needed. They kept running him to the outside, and Florida sniffed it out immediately, and they were able to bring him down. It was that situational football, and that's where Lane Kiffin came up short. And now Ole Miss, in a season where they had probably their best roster they've had in a really long time, looks like they're on the outside as well.
Yeah, I mean, it's funny about Ole Miss. You're right. They had that big win, but did you really trust this team? I mean, coming into that game, you said you were less shocked.
Yep.
I feel like America was already skeptical of this particular team with Lane Kiffin. Like, coming in the season, you thought that they were going to just score 50 points a game with that attack because, you know, Jackson Dart came back and their receiver came back, and I don't know. They've just looked a little bit off for most of the season. Like,
but they beat actually, Georgia.
I know. The funny thing about them is, when I think Lane Kiffin, I think sort of an air raid kind of attack. They've been really strong on the defensive and offensive line. They're a different team.
They were leading the nation in sacks.
Yeah, blown opportunity there. You're right. They beat Georgia, I don't know, in the SEC. Like, you know, that doesn't mean that these teams are bad. Honestly, I think if these teams were in another conference, we might be talking. I'm going to defend the SEC right now. I think if Ole Miss was in the Big Ten, it might be a different story. Alabama, I just think that they would have feasted off all those Maryland and Purdue games, where I just don't feel like the Maryland and Purdue's of the SEC are that easy to beat. Florida has the number one recruit in the country playing quarterback. I mean, they have talent galore, too.
I get it.
They've never gotten together.
I understand that, but up until right before Oklahoma pulled this upset on Alabama, I think we were saying the bottom of the SEC was also pretty bad.
We were?
Like, Oklahoma is not good. Mississippi State is not good.
Those two teams have not been good.
Okay, well, that's the bottom of the conference.
Yeah, but, I mean, how many teams apply to that category in the Big Ten? Obviously,
Purdue.
Purdue, yeah. Maryland, Northwestern, Michigan State.
I don't put Michigan Indiana, in the right. Michigan. I don't put Michigan in that dreadful, awful spot.
Did you hear me say Indiana?
Well, yeah. Okay, and that's the third top 10 team that bit it over the weekend. It was Indiana going to the Horseshoe to play Ohio State, and the final score looked pretty respectable. It was a 38-15. But it wasn't really that close. It never felt that close. It was a late touchdown and two-point conversion that Indiana got at the end of the game that, again, brought the score closer. But if you were actually this college football playoff committee and you were watching, after that opening drive touchdown that Indiana scored, it was all Ohio State.
Yeah, but their defense was really good. If you're the committee's going to hang their head on that defense. That was enough of a showing to get them into the playoff. The fact that Ohio State really didn't run up and down the field, I think, is enough. They say, well, Indiana can hang.
Okay, but see, that's the thing about where the SEC, I think, does have a leg to stand on here. You're going to have Indiana, who, when they had their two biggest tests against good defenses, it was Michigan, where they scored 15 points, and then Ohio State, where they scored 15 points, and that was, like, basically felt like in garbage time. Ohio State scored 31 straight points on Indiana on Saturday afternoon. And then you're going to tell me that Ole Miss is actually not deserving? Like, they're a worse team than Indiana? You're going to tell me Alabama's a worse team than Indiana? I just don't believe that. And maybe I'm reading the back of the jerseys, but still, like Kurt Cignetti, let's hear that, Manny. Can we hear the Indiana coach? So after they lose to Ohio State, Cignetti was asked about whether Indiana is still a college football playoff team, and he was offended by the question.
Is that a serious question? I'm not even going to answer that one. The answer's so obvious.
I mean, I kind of want you to answer it, actually. And I know that you're playing the game, and Coach Cignetti is awesome, and everyone loves him, and that's and so do we. That's not about that. It's just, I do want you to have to defend yourself now. Like, do that thing that coaches do. Give me the resume. Like, give me, lay it out for me, because, like, I watched Rhett Lashley, the SMU coach, on the College Football Playoff selection show last Tuesday, and SMU wins again. They beat Virginia easily. They're into the ACC title game. And he came ready with all the, this is why we're awesome. And I kind of wanted Coach Cignetti to make the case.
So I don't understand. You're not going to have any better cases. Like, who's your case? Penn State, who really just battled to the death with Minnesota? You think Indiana would battle to the death? Indiana would beat Minnesota by 3 touchdowns. They beat Nebraska so bad, and Nebraska was right there with Ohio State. Like, you're going to name any team. You could pick apart Indiana, but there's no one. Notre Dame? What has Notre Dame done?
Wait, but hold on. Yeah. So Penn State, I know that we give them a lot of crap, right? We really do.
Yes.
We don't know why, and I understood they had to hang on for this 26-25 win at Minnesota, but their overall schedule is number 35, and Indiana's 106. That's very, very different. It also helps maybe that, you know, Illinois now looks like maybe a little bit better of a win for Penn State. And their only loss is by a touchdown to Ohio State. I mean, Penn State and Indiana, who played Ohio State better? And I get the Penn State was at home.
I mean, but if you, like, there's just, if you're going to do who better, like, Oregon barely beat Wisconsin. Like, there's a thin line between all these teams. So you might as well go by record. I think I might be stealing this from Danny Cannell, which makes me a little nervous. But the fact that you have no idea, there's so much parity right now, that you have nothing better to choose than record. I mean, that's reality. Because there's very few teams that you're going to be able to make a case for that doesn't have embarrassing games.
I'm surprised you would go that route, though, because I feel like...
Well, it's because I wouldn't normally go that. Yeah, I'm totally against Indiana and Penn State being too high, but there just are not 12 great teams. There's 12, you know, there's like 4 great teams, and even those 4 great teams could lose to anybody. Anybody. I mean, even Oregon and Ohio State look amazing. Like, do you really think that, like, they couldn't lose on any given Saturday?
No.
EJ, you look like you want to say something.
I feel like this is the year where, honestly, if we went back to 4, we probably would be good.
No.
I said that weeks ago.
I know, but, I mean, this is the year. Like, it's very rare that this would happen, but maybe you have an argument between Penn State or Notre Dame, and I don't know, who cares? Like, any one of those teams are going to get smoked by Oregon probably in the playoff because they always lose these big games.
But you'd have Georgia wouldn't be in it then, maybe.
And they have 2 losses, and that's fine. I mean, I think that this would be a year where you say, you know what, they lost to Ole Miss on the road. Like, you know, we're okay with them not being in it for 1 year. I just feel, or that's 2 years in a row technically, but this is the year where probably if you had 4, you'd be fine. I'm glad we have 12. I'm not saying we should go back. It's just we went to 12 this year, and this is the year where it's like you got to squint to find the good 12 teams.
Well, the only reason why I'm happy that it's 12 is because if Boise wins out, I do want to see that. And I guess they would get in, but I don't think so.
Wait, are you really... Oregon has been impressive, but Ohio State has definitely been a letdown to me. I mean, why aren't those 5-star guys running into the end zone? Like, it feels like they are just a bizarre team who play anybody close. Texas, you have no idea who Texas is. And then the 4th team will be Penn State or Notre Dame. You're right. Like, that doesn't sound like a solid top 4 to me at all. I feel like Georgia is going to roll some of these teams, and they're not even that great either.
I know, but just going by what the committee has done in the past, I think you'd have a clear four teams. I don't.
You might have a clear four teams, but they're definitely not like head and shoulders above the eight below them. I think everyone's going to come into this playoff being like, God, I have no idea who's going to win this thing. I think it's going to be a very, very difficult thing to forecast.
But doesn't it feel like Georgia, besides Georgia, all these other teams outside of the top, really three, but let's say top four, like they're not really championship contenders. And I'm putting my own beloved Miami Hurricanes in there. Like,
yes, I think but
Georgia
you know,
is the only team.
Like, but you know on a given Saturday, if Tennessee's defensive line gets a hold of Ohio State, you have no idea who's winning that game. But I just say that could be close. Like, they're... These good teams are not that impressive to me. I mean, do we feel... NIL. NIL's just spread the talent out. You can't avoid it. There's so much parity.
I get it. And I got to be honest, I was watching that score of Georgia and UMass a lot longer than I thought I was going to. That was a 17-point game into the third quarter.
You have no idea which Carson Beck is going to show up on a given game.
It wasn't even him.
Yeah. And also, by the way, Oregon... Look at Oregon's schedule. Like, you don't really know that much about them either. I know they beat Boise State in that game early, but...
By a field goal.
They're quite unknown as well. I think...
They beat Ohio State. I mean, that's the big one.
You're right. It would be a clear-cut choice. I say instead of doing 12, let's just expand to the 16 and get Alabama back in there and get Clemson in there, too.
You know, with
let's
this
get
committee,
some Cade Klubnik going.
I wouldn't be surprised if all of a sudden on the last day they're like, you know what? We're going to make it 16. We really want Alabama in this thing. And Lane. We're going to throw Lane Kiffin a bone. 855-212-4227. College football was nuts this weekend. You're welcome to call in. And by the way, if you want to defend Penn State or Notre Dame, who seems to be taking some shrapnel on this show, or Indiana... You're welcome to do that.
You're making me uncomfortable. Like, I don't know what you're talking about.
Is that Signetti?
James Franklin.
That's
James
Franklin. That was Franklin. Quickly, Sean is our pal in Oregon, wants to talk to Perloff about something.
I think he's got amnesia sometimes.
I think your connection's not great, Sean. I can't hear what you're saying. Yeah, no, well, I've flip-flopped 100% on Nick Sirianni. Is that what you're about to say?
Well, I mean, look at this year. They're 9-2 right now.
Yes.
Last year at this time, they were 10-1, and they lost five of their last six games. And everyone was throwing Sirianni under the bus.
It was, but also, too.
He deserved to be.
It was, but I did defend. I said one thing last year. It was the defense that really fell apart. It was not the offense. So I would say that I really wanted to get the defensive coordinating team out of there. Obviously, Matt Patricia was not ideal. I think everybody did. So I wasn't just throwing Sirianni under the bus. It was really the lack of tackling that was killing me on a week-to-week basis.
I'm generally a defender of others. And if I call to defend anybody today, it's going to be Mike McCarthy and those Cowboys. How about that game?
But you're killing your draft position, Sean. Are you? I know you're not a Cowboy fan, but isn't that – if you're a Cowboy fan, are you really that excited about that win?
Well, no, the only team that's tanking in the NFL is those Giants. And if any owners listen to a fan base, the talking heads, they'll end up like those New York teams every time.
You're right about that, Sean.
Have a great day, you guys.
A great day to you, too. So, Sean, with a loaded call there, Perloff's Philadelphia Eagles beat the Rams – last night convincingly in Los Angeles, and now Perloff is all of a sudden Nick Sirianni's biggest fan. You fraud.
Oh, yeah. No, I'm frauding up. I mean, what do you expect? My team's 9-2. Do you expect me to have any logic here? This is not a time for logic. This is a time for hysteria.
I believe that Perloff started off the
Eagles,
show.
Fly,
oh, God. It's too early for that. I believe that Perloff started off the show with the biggest question remaining is how are you going to get your dad tickets to the game, and how is the traffic in the city going to get messed up because of the parade?
Yeah. No, that was a terrible thing to do, because I think the last time I really did this was when the Eagles were strong favorites against the Tampa Bay Buccaneers at home in the NFC title game. They lost that one. So you can't buy, you have the same dilemma.
I do.
Because you don't want to make concrete plans to go see your team in the Super Bowl because you might jinx them. It's a fan 101.
Is that fan 101?
Fan 101.
And by the way, Sean is also correct about the New York teams. And we know for sure that the Jets owner is looking at social media and making decisions off of that, which is just the most idiotic thing imaginable.
Don't be a freaking weirdo.
But the Giants are right behind them. They are both two embarrassing franchises that we love to point and laugh at.
Football in New York is a grift.
It's dead.
It's a grift. It's beyond dead. It's like it's not even real. Like they say that they're out there to go win football games, and then you watch these two teams play, and you're like, you're gaslighting me. You're no way you're telling me this is supposed to be professional football.
Honestly, Baker Mayfield had the best troll. This one was better than planting the Oklahoma flag at Ohio State.
Definitely.
The Tommy DeVito, he does the Tommy Cutlets. He's doing the, we need a name for this.
Because
the capiche, I don't know.
It's so great because it actually points to the grift that is New York football. Because this is a joke. Tommy DeVito's not an NFL, real NFL starting quarterback. This is not a real NFL star. Like, the fact that he even has a signature celebration is ridiculous. You're a bum. you're a 7th, 6th round pick. You're a 3rd string quarterback. And in this city, we're treating him like he's a star. Like, this shows you just how pathetic New York football is. That a clown like Tommy DeVito, not necessarily a player, but just the mystique that goes around him. And it's not really him. It's his dopey agent and the people in the crowd that are loving this guy. Like, this is our football star we have in New York City. Tommy DeVito.
Is crap.
It's pathetic.
This is why we love to point and laugh at New York.
I kind of like this loss, but I like what the Giants, I like everything the Giants are doing, right? Like, they're the tank. Sean nailed it. Like, they're really dedicated to tanking. The other teams are kind of wishy-washy about it.
No, it's going to end up being a good thing, but the problem is they might end up firing the coach and the general manager, and again, you're starting over with more uncertainty, unless it's Belichick who's coming in, and I don't even know how excited fans would be about Belichick.
I mean, I don't want to fire anybody, but they better fire the GM, right? I mean,
well, then are you going to fire the GM and keep the coach? Then you're going to hire a GM? Like, they were kind of a package deal, those two, coming from Buffalo.
I mean, they're obviously on a collision course with Shedeur Sanders. And will he go there? I would imagine yes, right? That feels like a Sanders destination.
855-212-4227, unless they're holding out for Arch. 855-212-4227. That's the number to call. See you guys on the phones. Hang tight. We're going to get to you in just a moment. Got
Welcome
so
back.
Much
Maggie
to do here
off,
on Maggie
breaking
and
down off, a wild
some grades
college
for
football
some of
weekend.
Our biggest college
I
got to
tell you,
stars.
The big game, bit of a letdown. Ohio Which State, Indiana.
Oh.
Felt like a gigantic Fox commercial for about 75% of the game. It really was hard to get anything going. But I think that, unfortunately, with 12 teams, like, we are robbed. Like, Indiana wasn't really playing for their life. Can you agree with that? Like, it wasn't like a do or die game of the century thing, because I think everyone in the back of their mind knew as long as Indiana doesn't lose 70-3, they're making the college football playoff. So I think we're seeing sort of the big debate about what this 12-team playoff means. You lose a little urgency in the regular season, and also you have teams that are not perfect that are going to be in the playoffs. And I think you have to accept that, Maggie Gray.
I know it's hard for me to accept, but if you're asking me which level of imperfect do I want a more imperfect Alabama or a more imperfect Ole Miss, or do I want a more imperfect Indiana? And that's where you're going to lose me. But to be fair, things are breaking very well for Indiana. I think they would have been in anyway. They dropped 5 spots in the AP poll, but Alabama losing, Ole Miss losing, I mean, this really cracks the door open, because Penn State won. And obviously, you know, Ohio State, you know, beat them.
Well, if you're just going to go on brand, then why not just put Colorado in there? Why not just have all the stars?
Listen, we'll get to Colorado. And I thought Dion was very sobering, and a sober message to his team after they lost to Kansas. Meanwhile, our guy Lance Leipold, how about him? Giant killer. Adrian is in Maryland, wants to defend Indiana. Hi, Adrian.
Yes, Maggie, I want to defend. I'm hoping the committee watches these games for real and don't look at the score, because if you watch that game, Indiana was in that game until that punter decides he's going to fumble the ball. And what's with these college teams, special teams? They always got to catch the ball. The punter's got to catch the ball and run to the side to kick the ball. They just go straight on and kick the ball. So, like I said, I watched that game. They were in a game. They moved the ball on Ohio State. And if that game's probably not in Ohio State, Indiana may win that game. They may win that game.
I didn't see it that way, though, Adrian. I'm going to be honest with you. I know that it was 14-7 at half, so that's obviously not a blowout. Yeah. But it just always felt like Ohio State was never in danger. And you're right, the bad punt, and it set up Ohio State for some really good field position. But to me, I don't know.
I did not. It felt like a very typical Ohio State game this year. Felt very much like the Penn State game to me. Like, right, yes, right, they controlled it, but it was so slow and just like, I mean, eventually, you know, Egbuka and those guys are going to break out at some point, but it didn't feel like a dominant win to me.
Yeah, but 31 straight points. What is that? What is that then?
But Maggie, my 31 straight points.
31 unanswered.
Yeah, I mean, from like the 3 minutes in the game until the fourth quarter. That's not.
I mean, if you didn't watch Indiana all year and you were like, well, they're playing cupcake team, and then you watch at least, I'd say, the first half, you would say, hey, these guys are deserving. They can play with the big boys. They're one of the big boys. And if they get in, they may be dangerous. They may be dangerous. They got a great defensive front. They play good defense. As long as they don't turn the ball over, they're fine. I think they're just fine.
But I know, Adrian, you and I are going to have to – we're going to agree to disagree on this one, but thank you for the phone call and great to hear from you. I mean, with 8 minutes left to go in the game, it was 31-7. And this wasn't really – to me, didn't seem like – it was going to set up for this wild finish for Indiana, but again, it is college football. I don't know. Adrian is a point. Do you learn from that game?
Yeah.
And maybe you go into the next game and you could actually do something. I think you saw it when Indiana played Michigan, which was a better defense than Ohio State, and they really couldn't do anything.
Yeah, I mean, I maybe you wonder, does Curtis Rourke get a little healthier with his hand? And maybe they're a different team. But when you say 31 unanswered points, that implies that those 31 points were scored in a brief period of time. They're talking about the entire game was 31 unanswered points.
But I'm just saying there was all...
Technically, Indiana, you're right.
Indiana scored on the first drive and then didn't score again until 8 minutes left in the game.
Yeah, then they not only that, they barely had 12 yards of offense the rest of the game. I'm not arguing with that, but they definitely didn't... Like, those two teams belonged on the same field. Like, Indiana's pretty tough to contain... Maybe Ohio State's not great offensively, but they certainly contained them. I mean, they felt like, you know, I agree with Adrian. If they play again, it could be a close game.
I
think
it.
Indiana's got to grind it out. And they need actually, you know what would help on offense? Like a few yards.
Well, they did out. Now you tell them.
They did out first down Ohio State somehow. Again, like the metrics, like the committee's going to look at that game and say, that's close enough. We're fine. You know that's what's going to happen.
No, it's already happening. It's already happening because the AP poll only dropped him 5 spots. Pat Boyle is here. He has headlines for us on this Monday. There's so much to get to.
I have dementia. Yes, that's true. And also in an era where teams do not want to pay and have refused to pay running backs, we might have the first non-QB to win MVP since Adrian Peterson in 2012. And Saquon Barkley did it again last night.
What a bet he gives it to Barkley. He gives it to Barkley, who cuts outside.
Uh-oh.
He's at the 40, the 50,
uh-oh,
the 40. He's going to go again. He's going to go again. Touchdown, Saquon Barkley. His all-time record, 72 yards.
Yep, Eagles radio the call. Saquon rushes for a career-high 255 yards, scores 2 touchdowns, both of 70 yards or more. The Rams had no answer for him. 37-20, the final at SoFi Stadium. The Birds have now won 7 in a row to get to 9-2. On the season. After the game, future Hall of Fame head coach and Eagles coach for life, Nick Sirianni, gushing over Saquon.
When you have the type of quickness, lateral movement that Saquon has, with the ability to accelerate and the speed to finish, and the power to break it through an arm tackle, or, I mean, he's got everything you look for in a back. He's been awesome.
Here's some of the bullet points from last night. Franchise record for most rushing yards and yards from scrimmage in a game. 9th most rushing yards in a game in NFL history, and the most since 2009. And only 12th time a player totals 300 scrimmage yards in a game. Saquon on pace for over 2,150 rushing yards. That would be the NFL record.
Right, so it would be 17 games, though, unless he sits the final game.
Also, too, I would wonder if they start slowing him down a little bit. You know, he's been about, what is he averaging, about 24, 25 carries a game.
26 last night.
Yeah, and they really pound him at the other team. Maybe they mix in some Gainwell, who also ran really well. I just think that now, for me, because a lot of Giants fans said, you're going to love Saquon until he gets hurt. So now I'm starting to worry about it. I'm like, you know what? Did they really need Saquon to carry 26 times? It is going to happen.
It's going to happen.
Yeah, but there was one play he got hurt a little bit last night, and then he was fine. But, like, every play I'm getting a bit nervous.
Well, nobody knows load managing like Philly.
That's true.
Continuing on with pouring through some of the results from yesterday that we haven't hit on yet. The witching hour, or it's the witching final 30 minutes, one hell of a doozy. Amidst one of the wildest finishes ever in the Cowboys-Commanders game and the Chiefs blowing a double-digit fourth-quarter lead before surviving the Panthers, we also had this.
Snap spot. Romo! Yes!
Yes!
In the middle!
Minnesota Vikings have won 5 consecutive games at Soldier Field.
Vikings radio, they blew an 11-point lead with under a minute to go before holding on to beat the Bears in OT 30-27. It was 27-16 after a John Parker Romo field goal with a minute 55 to go. Caleb Williams in Chicago went down the field, scored the touchdown, got the 2-point conversion, recovered the onside kick, hit a 30-yard pass to DJ Moore, and Cairo Santos hit a field goal as time expired. But the Bears went backwards on their lone drive in OT. The rest was history. Sam Darnold left the game for about 2-3 plays with a foot injury in the fourth before returning to replace Nick Mullins.
Raise your hand if you knew there was a kicker named Romo.
No clue.
No idea. I was like, what if this Romo wins more playoff games than Tony Romo? That'd be amazing. I guess he's from the XFL. They said that during the game.
He was on the Bears practice squad a couple years ago.
What a day.
Yeah. Seems like there's a lot of XFL players doing things right now.
People I trust.
Yeah.
Kicking, by the way. Is it Aubrey and then this guy?
Yeah, and Turpin returning that touchdown. So, anyway.
Yeah, anyone who got to the NFL in a conventional way, forget it. I only want the XFL people.
This collection, this ragtag collection of kickers is this. You said it earlier in the show, and I haven't gotten that out of my mind, that kicking is like one of the major storylines.
Definitely. Because it started off the season, no one could miss from 50. Now no one can make an extra point.
Yeah.
And the impact that it's had, I mean, yesterday the Commanders-Dallas game, they're one extra point away from tying that game, maybe going to overtime and can't do it. And then to recover an onside kick and Dallas takes it in for a touchdown. Every special teams is such an adventure.
Oh, can I say also a 2-point conversion? The analytic that you go for two when you're down 8 is the stupidest thing ever, because no one on earth can hit a 2-point conversion when it matters. They have no chance. The plays are not even close to converting, most of them.
Because the degree of difficulty on some of these 2-point conversions is like you're trying to send a rocket into outer space. Yeah. Like, how about just run the ball?
I was about to say, my theory is nobody runs the ball, and that's why they can't score 2 yards out.
The play is the quarterback's going to spin backwards 3 times and then hurl the ball into the corner of the end zone and pray
half
for
the time,
a catch.
There's got to be like, let's go into the back pages of the playbook and throw out some circus play where we're going to have the direct snap, tight end go in motion, and then fake take the snap.
Or just like, let's back shoulder fade this thing right into the third row. Like, it just doesn't, none of it makes sense. That's why Jaden Daniels yesterday I thought was brilliant. It's like, how about misdirection and then your quarterback basically just walks in for the 2-point conversion?
Because if the defense figures that out, then he gets destroyed, 7-yard loss.
Well, the Dallas Cowboys didn't figure it out.
Next time they will. I'm telling you, the 2-point conversions are, they're so depressing right now. Yeah. Like, they have... Especially if you bet on a game and you need that 2-point to hit, then you have no prayer.
I needed Jaden Daniels over 7.5 carries, and he runs in the 2-point conversion, which would have been the one that got me over, but nothing counts on a 2-point conversion except the points.
Yep.
Oh, that hurts.
And in Houston, I don't know what was more shocking, the Texans losing to the 2-win Titans or C.J. Stroud pulling a Dan Orlovsky, stepping out of the back of the end zone for a safety that sealed the game. He's in the process of getting sacked anyway. It didn't matter. 32-27 the final. This game was back and forth the entire way. The deciding blow was a 70-yard touchdown bomb from Will Levis to tight end Chig Okonkwo that gave Tennessee the lead with 9 minutes left. Speaking of kickers, you guys talked about it earlier in the show, Houston's Kaimi Fairbairn then missed a chip shot, 28-yard field goal with less than 2 minutes to go. Texans have now lost 4 of 6. They're 7-5 on the season, and Stroud's sophomore slump continues. Another 2 picks in the loss. He's now thrown 5 of them in the last 3 games.
I didn't realize it was even that bleak. It just felt really bad. To your point, though, him stepping out of the back of the end zone, he was under total duress.
Right. I was going to ask, I know, because his foot was right on the edge. Did they determine he was out of bounds?
They ruled him out of the back of the end zone before the sack.
And the whole thing was going the wrong way on that drive anyway. But then they got the... I was curious about that. So they did an onside kick on the safety. Like, isn't that a strategy? Because if they had punted it, they wouldn't have been able to onside punt. So... I don't even know. It didn't matter.
I was confused by that, too.
I was very confused. I was like, ooh, is the competition committee going to have to look at what just happened? Because you can force an onside kick by running out of the back of the end zone. It gives you another chance at a possession. Think about it.
Now I'm trying to remember. I don't think I even saw the punt after that.
Yeah, no, they didn't punt. It was a safety. So they got the onside kick, the safety,
to
declare.
So they didn't get the onside kick.
Yeah. Yep.
Basically, even the officiating experts don't know what the new kickoff rules are. The safety, remember the Miami game earlier in the year? Miami Nobody knows what happens.
So
in some
well,
of
there
these
you
situations.
Go. Though, if you're down by anything less than seven,
yeah, run out of the back of the end zone.
And you're
trying onside
up.
Kick.
You might as well just we're not going to go 90 yards. We might as well just take a safety and try to recover the onside kick and then go 50 yards.
Rich McKay and the competition committee are going to hear you say that, Pat, and kibosh it.
You want me to hit some hoops real quick or save it?
Save it because in the chat, youtube.com/InfinitySportsNet, twitch.tv/InfinitySportsNetwork. I just want to give a tip of the cap to Pat. Daly says you do a very good job on Sunday's game day gridiron.
Oh, my God. You must have had a crazy one yesterday.
Gridiron game day, but yes.
Gridiron game day. How dare they?
Was yesterday nuts with the Vikings, Bears, and Cowboys, Commanders?
I don't think I recovered. Like, the show is 12 to 8 p.m. Eastern. That whole chaos concluded around 4:30 p.m. Eastern, and then even after the show, I got back to my apartment, and I still felt like I was waiting for like the next Commanders Cowboys twist to happen.
Kevontae Turpin just going to come out of nowhere.
Yeah, you had that. You had the Texans Titans game. You had the Bears Vikings game, and you had the Chiefs game, all happening literally in a 20-minute span.
That's crazy. So Manny, you used to be on that show, right?
On which one? Gridiron Game Day?
Yeah.
Yeah, it used to be called Ion Football.
Yeah.
Well, EJ, you produced it last year, didn't you?
And EJ was on that show because for some reason Billy's in the chat who says he thought that it was Boyle and Manny together, and he said the newsroom would look like the desk at the end of Scarface. We're not those kind of people, Billy. You're getting entirely different thought of what it's actually
what
like.
What do you think
here?
Me and Gelb were like?
They say do a great job.
Thank you. Appreciate that. I was trying to find something funny to say from
that was the bottom line. Yeah.
That's kind of a record scratch right there. Like the record.
Wait, there's nothing it's about you two that you would make you think that you're like the desk at the end of Scarface.
You guys
it's not
don't need,
that kind of show.
Yeah, you have dementia.
12 to 8 during the day, not 12 to 8 at night. You don't need chemical enhancement to stay awake, especially with the games like this.
Yeah, the games do it enough.
I mean, Manny maybe because he's up until 2 a.m. watching Knicks tape, and who knows?
It's all he's got. Giants are a mess.
What, do you want me to break down Tommy DeVito breaking, dropping back, three-step drop, and then getting sacked before he can take a four-step?
He can't even speak.
I can't. Sorry,
Manny,
so
we got a parting shot next hour. We have a return shot. Don't worry.
I can't wait for it.
I still have my top five most miserable people in the NFL. Manny might break.
I can't
like,
wait
crack
to be number
into the
one
list.
On that. I can't wait to be number one on that list.
855-212-4227. Thank you so much, Pat. Coming up. Okay. Now we've got a major dilemma on our hands after what we saw yesterday. We'll tell you about it next. MVP. Welcome back. Maggie Gray, Andrew Perloff. Just so many wild finishes yesterday. College football was nuts. The NFL, just goofy. Goofy endings between the Vikings and the Bears and between the Commanders and Dallas Cowboys. We have Detroit Brian. Hey, Brian.
Hello?
Hey, Brian, it's a little loud where you are, man.
Is that better?
Yeah. Okay, so your name is Detroit Brian. You're calling us from Vancouver, Canada, and you want to talk about the 49ers. Did I hit every city?
You did. It's because I'm a diehard Wings fan, just for clarity.
Gotcha. Okay. What's your thought on the Niners?
So here's the take. First and foremost, I have to say this. For all the morons and idiots that said Brock Purdy was a systems quarterback and was just a plug-and-play guy and you could put any quarterback in that system, I think this week showed that you can't just put any quarterback in to play with the 49ers.
Well, I hear what you're saying. I think Purdy might have been trying to do a little too much, and that's what got him hurt. But also, no Trent Williams yesterday, no left tackle.
Yeah, so I think you guys would know better than me. Just my take is that in the States, I think everybody's diehard for football, from high school to college to professional football. So, like, up here, hockey is religion the same way. From university, high school, from everybody, like, lives and breathes. So the comparison I was going to make is the Canucks were one of the best teams first in the Pacific last year. They had no injuries. Everything went right for them. This year, they're still a playoff team, but missing their leading scorer, their top goaltender, their top point getter, and they're still in a playoff spot, and this city like goes crazy and says, trade the stars, do whatever. And I think when you look at the 49ers, they're missing like every all-star at key positions. And I'm not saying they're a Super Bowl team, mm-hmm. but when you look at how crappy the NFC is, is it really unfathomable to think that this team could actually win the division? Even if they lose to the Bills, they're one game out, even if they've lost to their division rivals. And I'm telling you, they're going to take the division. I think people think I'm crazy. I was already talking about this, but they're going to take the division, make the playoffs. And does anybody want to play them?
Man.
Yes,
Brian,
I do.
It's a great question.
I 100% do. They're not making the playoffs.
I don't think they are either. But here's Brian's point, though.
Yeah.
They are one game out. That whole division is super jumbled up. And do you trust any of the teams above them?
Yes.
Who?
I trust the Rams. And
the Rams just got blown out last night to your team.
Yeah, they're really good, though. I can't wait for...
you can't say that.
I trust the Cardinals at home. I trust James Conner. Honestly, it's just a shame because there's just no way San Francisco could get everyone healthy and go out to Buffalo and win. So then they fall to 5-7. And the Cardinals and the Rams and the Seahawks all play each other. They're going to collect some wins out of that. And it's going to be too hard for the Niners to overcome this. Also, I just don't believe that Nick Bosa is going to be himself the rest of the year. Because you see him grabbing his side on every play when he was out there. So without him, they're just lost. And believe me, I've been a defender of the Niners. I think it's over.
I don't think the Buffalo game has anything to do with anything.
They're 5-7. And then,
But then they have Bears, there's the Rams. They have two home games against the Bears and the Rams. They're at Miami. Okay, that's maybe looking a little harder. Detroit, and then at Arizona.
That's all real hard.
Yeah.
That's one of the hardest. I mean, I think I don't have it in front of me. I'm sure this is one of the hardest remaining strength of schedules.
It is. This is the one thing that the only thing that the 49ers have going for them, in my opinion, is that I don't trust any of the teams above them. I don't trust the Rams. You just saw the Rams at home against a good team in the NFC, and it was not even a game after the second quarter. And then
I wouldn't necessarily say that it was the Rams were moving the ball at will. They just made key mistakes, and also too they. The 270-yard runs by Saquon Barkley hurt them.
Yeah,
but I have to say they were
in negative 6 yards in the second quarter.
They were definitely in the game though. I mean, what was it? When did it become a 2-score game in the second half? Right.
Yeah, but okay. So I think the Rams they're not consistent at all. Obviously, I don't know if I trust the Seahawks. Now, good win yesterday, and that was a slog of a game.
Was it a good win?
Geno keeps throwing these interceptions at these terrible times. Now, it didn't end up burning him yesterday, but that pick in the end zone is just, he cannot throw that ball there, and he's got enough experience to know better. And then Arizona, I don't know if anyone looked more miserable than Kyler Murray yesterday. He looked like he wanted to just quit on the sideline, and they lost, and they look bad. Their defense actually didn't look as bad as their offense did.
I don't know why, and it's going to kill me, but I'm going to back this Los Angeles Rams team. They're just so much talent.
They have the same record as the 49ers.
I'm well aware of that. But if they're getting guys back and the 49ers are losing guys, that's the thing. Like, we could say whatever we want about this NFL season. Tell me who's healthy and who's not healthy, and everyone's come back for the Rams, and everybody's leaving for the Niners. Like, what's the trend? The Niners just like it's every week. It's a new decision. Like this guy's probably not going to play. I bet you they might even shut down McCaffrey because what are we doing here? Do we need 2.9 yards per carry from Christian McCaffrey at the end of the season? I don't want to see it.
They're probably thinking that he just needs some game reps to get himself back into shape. I don't know because he's definitely not the best option for them right now. I'll give you that.
It's a mess. The other thing too. Well, I'm going to save this take. The NFC North bit overrated right now, maybe. It does help. I'm just saying, because this happened with my Eagles a couple years ago. The AFC South makes you look like world beaters. They're awful, and the NFC North, everybody's got like a 9-2 record because they're guaranteed 4-0 against the AFC.
Okay, so here's the thing about saying the NFC North, it might be overrated. I don't know if I agree with you because the Lions are the class of maybe the NFL. Not just the NFC.
Yeah, well, we know the Lions can destroy the AFC South teams. Like
they beat their own division. They beat the Packers and Lambeau.
I know. I just think that their schedule is laying out where they really look like a juggernaut right now. Let's get them back in the NFC and then give it a couple weeks.
855-212-4227. Do you agree with Perloff? NFC North, a little overrated. I am not co-signing on that take. Caleb Williams looked much better yesterday. Clearly, change of offensive coordinators helped this dude. We have so much to do, including every NFL game in 60 seconds. We also have plenty of college football for you on what was a wild weekend. MVP.